Sin test number two got the service, got the process, was full at its own request. Its agent was served. It went to the correct people in Ohio, and that Ohio was supposed to have taken care of it because that was the legal services, and they didn't. They defaulted. But you are absolutely right that Cintas told them, and when they were told, they sought to amend. Then Cintas didn't want the amendment and won the first round with the judge. And go ahead.
I don't mean to interrupt, Justice Abramson, but I would beg to differ one thing.
Okay.
We never said we didn't want the amendment. We want the correct party sued. What we said was, now that you've amended, unless you are willing to stipulate to waive the alleged default, because we don't think you have a default, and move forward, then you haven't gotten jurisdiction over us. I mean, it's sort of play nice time here. Either you waive your technical issue, and we'll waive ours, and we move forward, which, of course, is the way 99% of these kinds of things get resolved in the real world, or you don't, and we don't. And they didn't, and we didn't. So then we move forward. And that's why, in response to the question about jurisdiction, I don't know what the trial court will ultimately determine is the situation with regard to jurisdiction, because of the conditional nature of the circumstances at the time. It may well be that the court will say, I don't care about the circumstances under which you conceded jurisdiction. You did, and that's that. I don't think that's an issue for this court.
Counsel, the circuit court found that the registered agent for Cintas Corporation No. 2 was, in fact, served with the summons and complaint. Are you contesting that finding?
No.
The circuit court also found, in this case, the misnomer is due entirely to the actions of Cintas Corporation No. 2 in terms of the business name it chose to operate under in the state of Wisconsin and in relation to the plaintiff. Are you contesting that finding?
Yes, I don't understand where that came from because, of course, we know, as a matter of fact, that Mr. O'Connor's office got the name of the registered agent for Cintas Corporation No. 2. How they were misled into thinking that the entity was Cintas Corporation when, in fact, they got the registered agent for Cintas Corporation No. 2 has always escaped me and escapes me now. In addition, at a time when it made no difference.
The answer to your question, in terms of the circuit court, I don't know here, but in terms of the circuit court, the basis for its statement included the list of stuff that the Chief Justice read, and then right before the statement, it also says, Cintas Corporation No. 2 apparently chose to do business in the state under the name of Cintas Corporation. Cintas Corporation No. 2 chose to litigate as a plaintiff in this state under the name of Cintas Corporation. And then the court distinguished in this case, unlike a case involving a case of mistaken identity where the wrong party is served and the summons and complaint, the registered agent was served, and it's due entirely to the actions of Cintas Corporation. So one of the problems I have is all of the stuff that the circuit court relied on, that Justice Rokensack also referred to. A lot of indicia of holding yourself out as doing business as Cintas Corporation. How do you get over that?
It's a brand name. Is every McDonald's owned by McDonald's Corporation? Of course not. We all know they're owned by local franchisees. Big signs, literature, everywhere. All kinds of things that they use. They have McDonald's all over it because it's a brand name. It's a trade name. I see their trucks around the Milwaukee area at least all the time.
They sue a trade name rather than the official legal name?
No. We all make mistakes like Mr. O'Connor did.
Well, years ago, I used to represent Employers Insurance of Wausau. They spent millions and millions of dollars with their train station ad, Employers Insurance of Wausau. And people would sue Employers Insurance of Wausau. But in reality, the name of the company is Employers Mutual Liability Insurance Company of Wisconsin. Now, were all of those people who sued Employers Insurance of Wausau in response to this ad and in response to the common name everyone used, were their summons and complaints defective because they didn't say Employers Mutual Liability Insurance Company of Wisconsin?
I think it depends on the specifics of those cases to some extent that I don't know, but in general, I would say technically, yes. If there's another entity known as Employers Insurance Company of Wausau, there wasn't, and the name they used was Employers Insurance of Wausau, which doesn't even have company or corporation in it, so frankly, a lawyer who sued that, I would criticize myself. That doesn't sound like a company name. That sounds like a trade name. But in fact, if there were two different companies and they sued in the name of one and served the other one, they would confront the defense attorney with the question I would have had in this case. And that is, unlike Hosley, where you know they may have named it wrong, but there's only one VFW post in La Crosse with a name anything like this, I know who I appear for. Who does the attorney appear for in this case? Do you appear for Syntus Corporation to answer? Do you appear for Syntus Corporation number two? Because the fact of the matter is, they sued Syntus Corporation, and they served Syntus Corporation number two, and they described in the complaint a company that sounds a lot more like Syntus Corporation number two. But again, what I learned in defending lawsuits is, many times there are things in complaints that I don't believe are accurate. Who do I answer for, Justice?
Let me ask, just so I understand the answer, going back to my example of Employers Insurance. If Employers Insurance of Wausau was sued, and it's really the name of Employers Mutual Liability, et cetera, is that defective?
I think, first of all, that's for you to decide, not me. If you're asking my position under the case law, if there is only one entity in the world that could possibly be referred to by that misnomer, that's Hosley, and it's not defective.
Okay.
If, in fact, there is another entity, and I'll just bet my life there's another company with a name very much like Employers Insurance of Wausau someplace, because every insurance company name seems to be the same. If there's another one just like that, it may well be defective.
Okay, so your analysis then boils down to, are there two separate companies, right?
I don't think it boils down to that. I think that's an important attribute, yes.
What happens when we have here a circuit court finding that says there may be two separate companies, but one is doing, Syntus 2, is holding itself out as doing business as Syntus
2? I don't think there's a finding to that effect. I think there's a finding by the court that it was this conduct by Syntus Corporation number 2 which led Mr. O'Connor's firm and perhaps Mr. Johnson to believe the correct name of the entity was Syntus Corporation.
Maybe this isn't a finding, but I'll read it. And it says on page 118 of the appendix, Syntus Corporation number 2 apparently chose to do business in this state under the name of Syntus Corporation.
Okay, accept that for whatever it's worth. Just like all the McDonald's entities that do business under the name of McDonald's. That's what trade names are for. That's what people buy when they enter into franchises and other arrangements.
So
it's hardly uncommon.
This isn't tantamount, in your mind, to a finding of the court that Syntus number 2 chose to do business in this state under the name of Syntus Corporation.
That's I don't view it that way. I don't see the finding as being particularly important either. Because as Justice Rogensack pointed out, we're making decisions here that don't just apply to this case. They apply on a much broader level. And the question is, is it more appropriate, since I think Justice Crooks is correct, there is some inconsistency, particularly in the older cases. I think it's difficult to reconcile the railway case with some of the other cases. I would differ with Mr. O'Connor's explanation of that case. There were two companies in existence. There was only one in business. And so nobody was misled. There's no issue there. But some of these cases are a little difficult to reconcile. It seems to me it makes perfectly good sense to say, when you know as a litigant you have not named the correct party, that there is a different corporate entity that you have sued than the one you served, and you choose to try and go ahead and get a default judgment anyway, rather than taking the other obvious course of action, which is amend your complaint, serve Syntus Corporation number 2 with a summons and complaint that contains the concededly correct name, maybe even just ask the guy who called you is, will you guys waive service, and we can get past this, you do so at your peril. And if it turns out later that you're wrong, you're wrong. I do want to, if I could just...
I just have a question for you, because I want to make sure what you expect should you prevail. The Court of Appeals said, and this is Appendix 110, that the summons failed to accurately name the defendant, so the service of process failed to confer personal jurisdiction, therefore the default judgment against Cintas 2 is void, right? And it's irrelevant that Cintas 2 actually was served and actually had notice. That's the next line.
There are multiple cases that say that.
Okay. Neither party challenges the amendment of the pleading, so the pleading now names Cintas 2. Accordingly, says the Court of Appeals, we reverse the default judgment and remand for further proceedings. Now, I kept hearing you say that what's going to happen on the further proceedings?
I think two things would have to be done, Your Honor. The first thing would be after, in all honesty, I go back and review the record and determine exactly what our position should be on this jurisdictional issue. We will either concede that that statement that I made, admittedly made, is a concession of jurisdiction, and we will move forward to having some sort of a trial on the issues that were resolved by the default, resolving those in the merits, or the court will have to determine whether a case has been commenced against anybody by the service.
Look, the default judgment is void under the Court of Appeals. Do we
Yes.
agree on that?
Yes.
All right. We also, the Court of Appeals says that the caption has been amended and the pleadings have been amended to name Cintas 2, and neither party challenges the amendments.
No, we've never challenged their right to amend.
So well, that's different. You said right to amend. The Court of Appeals says that they have been amended and you haven't challenged it.
That's
what the Court of Appeals said.
And that's correct. I didn't mean to say a different thing than you said.
I read this to say, okay, it goes back. The pleadings have been amended, but Cintas 2 hasn't been served. And then Johnson would have to serve Cintas 2, and then the proceedings you'd have to answer, right? And it would go forward. That's how I read this. How do you read this?
My uncertainty is, because this issue is not before the court to decide, I don't think, so I had not gone back and reread it. The issue that Justice Rogensack raised is, have we, for all purposes, waived any defect as to the commencement of the action post-default against Cintas Corporation number 2? We may have. I'm just not prepared to address that because I hadn't anticipated coming up. It may well be that we have, in which case what would happen in the trial court is, the trial court would then have to determine whether anyone's entitled to a new trial on damages, since we did have a trial on damages and there was a determination made. At a minimum, the court would have to have a trial on the issue of liability, because we weren't allowed to litigate the liability issues because of the default.
So the only issue is whether they may not have to serve you again. Is that right?
It is possible they don't have to serve us,
okay.
And that's resolved. That would have to be determined by the trial court.
Is there a statute of limitations issue here?
There might be if they haven't served us. I just don't know the answer to that as I stand here today. But I think that's an issue that would have to be resolved in the trial court, and I will again state, I hadn't anticipated having to talk about that today. If I would go back and look at the record of that hearing and determine exactly what I represented to the court, the answer may turn out to be correct, that we have stipulated away that issue and it's no longer an issue.
I don't recall
that many years back that clearly.
I just wanted to know what the Court of Appeals means when it says remand for further proceedings.
I believe that when I got it, I think that meant it would be remanded. The trial court would have to determine what issues remain to be resolved. That may be jurisdiction, service, and statute of limitations. Those issues may all be resolved by virtue of the statement I made in the context of the default. But if there is anything left after that, the issue that I think would have to be resolved is the liability issues. My own personal belief is, we had a trial on the damage issues. I don't think anyone's entitled to a new trial on damages. We would simply have to resolve liability.
Mm-hmm. Counsel, if this case involved a stock ownership claim instead of a personal injury for an automobile accident while he was driving around doing his job claim, would Cintas 2 be the corporation that he would sue for the stock, the employee stock ownership claim?
Let me see if I understand, Justice Ziegler. If he claimed that his contract to get stock had been breached, who would he sue?
Right.
My belief would be that he would sue Cintas Corporation number 2 and obtain a judgment for either money damages for not getting the stock or specific performance to have the stock issued to him, but the stock would come from Cintas Corporation. You might have to join Cintas Corporation as an additional party to get effective relief on the specific performance.
Right. Assume you're suing for specific performance.
If I was suing...
Isn't his agreement, his employment agreement is with Cintas Corporation, a Washington corporation doing business in Ohio who has a registered agent in, I can't remember if it's Washington or Ohio. I mean, the corporate documents are different. There's even a choice of law provision that says Ohio law is the choice of law.
If you're asking me if I was representing Mr. Johnson suing for a breach of agreement, knowing everything I know today, I'd sue them both.
Right.
And let the court sort it out.
Well, I'm just trying to figure out if they're ever separate or if they're always one.
They're always separate. He got a W-2 from Cintas Corporation number two. The fact that they have come up with a handful of situations in this case, we didn't believe this was even a material issue. I still don't believe it's a material issue. There are undoubtedly hundreds of documents that reflect the correct situation. They've come up with the ones that reflect the other ones, including things like purchase orders and things like that that just say Cintas, don't say Cintas Corporation. I mean, they dredged for everything they could get.
Well, should the choice of law be Ohio law?
If the contract says it should be Ohio law, I frankly haven't looked at that part of the contract in a long time, whoever it's with, it should be Ohio law, correct?
Counsel, I'd like to come back to discussion of the issue of the technical misnomer versus the more substantive one. And what I hear from your argument is that you would say the distinction in this fact pattern before us is that because there are two ongoing businesses and that the one named in the summons and complaint is an ongoing business, albeit not the one they intended to sue apparently, that that is what makes it the substantive defect.
It is that combined with the fact that both WSSTAT section 801.09 and the case law makes it clear, the Bullock case in particular, that you have to be named as a party in the caption to have the court have jurisdiction over you. You don't have notice that you are sued unless you're named. The exception the court has created, which frankly, if I was the justice, I would just eliminate. I think it causes more intellectual problems than anything else, that a misnomer is different, I would be in favor of saying that should just be abandoned. A misspelling of a name by one letter where we all know who we're talking about, that's one thing. But
if the facts were different and the summons and complaint here said Cintas Corporation number two, but misspelled Cintas instead of an A-S-I-S, I assume you would say that that's a technical defect.
Yes, I would say there's no question who the entity is that's being sued because it's clear it's a typo.
Do you see a need for us to articulate and to sort of harmonize the definition if we don't do away with the whole distinction between technical and substantive misnomers? Do you see a need? I look at Ness, for instance, and I see how they address this, and I look to...
I don't mean to interrupt Justice Gamer, but this is one of the cases I want to talk about because, frankly, when I read through the briefs and I saw the big argument about who's mischaracterizing Ness, I went back and reread Ness, and we're just
like
wrong
you
about that.
Very specifically to address the footnote 10 is where it seems to me that their primary focus in Ness was the fact that it was an after-default amendment of the complaint. And in footnote 10, it seems we get their sort of view on what's technical and what's substantive. Footnote 10, as we stated earlier, Zero Plus and U.S. Billing are subsidiaries of U.S. Long Distance Corp. and have the same in-house counsel, period. At the outset, Zero Plus was served correctly. Because of the relationship between Zero Plus and U.S. Billing, as far as these parties are concerned, the amended complaint is to be viewed as a technical change.
My response to that is this. There is nothing in Ness, in the Court of Appeals decision in Ness, or in the Supreme Court decision in Ness, which suggests that anybody even raised that issue. I frankly am not certain why the footnote is in there. No one ever argued. I was one of the attorneys in the Ness case. No one ever argued in Ness that the garnishee defendant was not subject to the jurisdiction of this court because of this, I'll use misnomer in the loosest term. The issue in...
And the misnomer there, my recollection, is that instead of saying
It's Wisconsin Corporation versus Texas.
Right, exactly. And the correct one was Texas.
I think that if someone had raised that issue, if someone had made the argument we are making here today in Ness, that, wait a second, this Texas garnishee defendant did not get proper notice that it was being sued when it got served with a pleading that named a Wisconsin garnishee defendant with an identical name, if I was representing them, I would think I was going to win. But I don't see any indication other than the one stray comment in the footnote in the Court of Appeals decision, in the Supreme Court decision. I don't recall it being raised on oral argument. I didn't go back and read the briefs, but I'm sure I have a perfect memory of them. But I just don't remember that being an issue in the case at all. The issue was this magic saving to resuscitate the default. They were way past this issue.
You may have already said it, but what is the rule that you would ask us to adopt here?
I would have you adopt the rule of the Bullock case. The rule of the Bullock case says clearly, if you are not named in the caption, consistent with, they don't say this, but consistent with the language of 801.09 and the language of the statutory summons authorized by that, to each person named above as a defendant, you don't have a duty to answer and you're not subject to the jurisdiction of the court, because under Bullock and the clear language of 801.09 and the clear language of the mandatory summons, you are not named as a defendant when you're not named, and there's another entity there.
Counselor, what if this was a slip and fall case instead of the kind of case that we have here? And I'm walking down the sidewalk. I'm in the driveway of the operation of Syntus number 2, and I fall on some ice and I really hurt myself. I'm not sure who owns that. So when I file a lawsuit, I sue, quote, X corporation. End quote. I give all the particulars in the complaint, where I fell, what I was doing, the address and everything, and I serve Syntus number 2. Do I have personal jurisdiction over Syntus number 2 for my slip and fall?
Just so I understand your hypothetical, Syntus number 2 is not named as a defendant, it's just XYZ?
It just says X Corporation or XYZ, right.
Jurisdiction over Syntus Corporation number 2.
There's no personal jurisdiction.
No.
You don't have to respond, you don't have to do anything.
Right, and I don't know what the purpose of filing that one. That would be done in the case where, for example, you know one of the defendants you want to sue, and you don't know the other one. Mm-hmm. So you sue the company you know is responsible for maintaining that area of the sidewalk because the truck was right there. They were washing it off. And you sue XYZ because you don't know who the landowner is. And then you do some discovery, and you find out, and you amend. And that amendment then relates back to the date of the original filing because of the John Doe pleading.
Okay, so that amendment relates back.
And this would have related back if they had filed an amended complaint and served it within the time permitted by law, which was, of course, the choice that was open to them to solve all of this. It was a conscious decision here, and I am not critical of Mr. O'Connor's firm in any way, but let's face it, someone made a tactical decision that our chances of getting a default and avoiding contributory negligence issues in this case were better than the chances of doing well if we reserved, gave up on the argument that maybe we were entitled to a default and litigated on the merits. That's a defensible choice. But let's not pretend they were misled here. They knew before they took the default they had the wrong defendant named. They knew the correct one. They substituted it. They made a tactical choice like all lawyers do all the time.
Chief, if I may, I see your red light is on, but
I'm always happy to talk longer.
Okay, thank you. In your earlier comments, I will characterize it as kind of disparage the opposing position. You said they dredged up a few documents that indicated that Syntus 2 was doing business in the state of Wisconsin as Syntus. But although that's kind of persuasive, it seems to me that that has nothing to do with your legal argument. Your legal argument is they are separate corporations. So they could have dredged up a few documents, or it could have been scores and scores and scores of documents.
Or none.
Or none, but scores and scores and scores. Maybe everything they used in the state of Wisconsin was a document that just said Syntus. Your argument is a legal argument is that as long as it is a separate corporation, it is really irrelevant how they hold themselves out. That's what I hear you ultimately saying. Are you ultimately saying that?
I try to argue the facts of the case as they stand rather than having to argue the worst possible position for my client. But I think logically that follows, yes. It doesn't make it, against everything you said, even under your hypothetical, they serve the registered agent. Where does one get the registered agent? You get it by going to the Department of Financial Institutions. When you go there, we all know what it says. It says Syntus Corporation number 2. It doesn't say Syntus Corporation. So it's not as if this was impossible to determine. It was right there. They could have sued both of them. And of course, they're not even close to the statute of limitations. I understand how this all comes up. You start your lawsuit. It's frankly not a big deal. If there's a problem with it, you fix it. And we don't mind they're fixing it. We mind they're taking a default judgment against someone who was never subject to the jurisdiction of the court. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I'm sorry. Yes, you are, Mr. Johnson. I got 2 Mr. Johnsons here. Mr. O'Connor, rebuttal.
Mr. Johnson's quick to point out that we could have done something different, but he won't give up his legal advantages, and if you send it back down, he's going to be arguing that the statute of limitations has run.
This was a 2006 auto accident, wasn't it?
Yes. But, Your Honor, it's a contract case.
Pardon me?
It's a contract case.
Well, there was an auto accident, and then there's an insurance issue.
As to the individual driver, the statute of limitations has run, but we've already gotten a judgment against him.
Okay.
As against the corporation, who is our employer. And then that's the thing that everyone is forgetting. We're talking about all these jurisdictional things and forgetting this arises out of a contract of employment. Who is our employer? Now, if you go to work for McDonald's and it's a franchise, when you have an employment contract, it's with the owner of the franchise. It's not with McDonald's. When McDonald's goes and gets supplies, it's not with the franchise. It's with the individual company who ordered it. And the contracts and all of those things are done that way.
When did the statute of limitations run, theoretically?
The statute of limitations will run 6 years after they breached the contract.
And the breach was, in your opinion?
When they refused to pay the benefits.
Which was?
I don't know the date, Your Honor.
Okay.
But
is there a statute of limitations issue?
There will be a statute of limitations issue.
I know. The reason I ask that is if Justice Crooks, who's analyzed the cases in terms of perhaps money matters, so do statute of limitations matter in these cases?
Yes, Your Honor. And I did not view that as a problem is when Mr. Johnson, Kerry Johnson, conceded that we could replace one party with the other. We no longer thought about it any further. He says
that's not his position necessarily today.
Pardon?
That's not his position necessarily today.
Well, it depends upon what part of his speech we're talking about.
Okay.
Counsel, what in regard to technical misnomers or more substantive ones, what is the rule that you would urge us to adopt?
I would view them, that they all would be technical. And that if there was a disadvantage, in not naming them, I think the Bullock case is one that is correct. I think you do have to name, you can't just put et al. In there and say that gives notice. That is not correct. I think if you viewed that as a technical defect, you would come to exactly the same conclusion as if you viewed it as a fundamental defect.
I thought I understood maybe to make it a little more comprehensive, based on what I heard you say during your main presentation, that they're all technical so long as there's no prejudice. I thought that's what I heard you to say, but I don't know if that's what
you
want
to do. That would be, if I were a justice, that's how I would be voting. Because, these are notice pleadings, and it's a much easier way to go at it. But the one thing I would like you to keep in mind, we could have served them another way. We could have hired a process server out in Ohio and had no knowledge whatsoever of Syntax Corporation number 2 existed, served them at their corporate office in Ohio, And Mr. Johnson is saying that you have no jurisdiction under those circumstances either. And
wouldn't Cintas Corporation then have to answer? I mean, the difference here is that you had two different names, two different entities. You served one, but you named the other. I mean, if you named and served the right entity, they would then presumably answer. And if they don't, they're in default. But go ahead and answer.
We don't have a cause of action against them. And so they answer, so that solves the judicial problem, but it doesn't solve the employee's problem. He has served a company that he doesn't work for.
Okay, and that's where I'm just wondering why you chose to do it this way. When I go through the record, it looks like you served the Cintas 2, but naming Cintas Corporation. You didn't serve Cintas Corporation in Ohio. You move for default judgment when Cintas Corporation and Cintas 2 don't answer. And then before the motion hearing date, Cintas Corporation files and says, hey, you got the wrong corporation. You need to be amending your pleadings to name Cintas Corporation 2. And you don't do that. Instead, you go ahead to the motion hearing date, which is after they tell you, just put in the right name. And that could have been done as a matter of right, since this was filed April of 07, and by July 2 of 07, they're saying, wrong name, put in the right name, and instead of just amending as a matter of right, okay, it should be Cintas Corporation 2. At this address, we'd like to amend it as a matter of right, or serve, reserve, or whatever you want to do, or ask counsel, will you accept service on behalf of Cintas? I mean, a lot of different things can happen in that regard. You go ahead to the motion here. Why do that instead of making sure your caption has the right name, the right address, and having the dispute heard in court, where everyone's heard?
My duty and loyalty is to Robert Johnson. I have a tactical advantage. I am going to exploit that tactical advantage just as Terry Johnson would exploit that tactical advantage.
So it's not that you didn't know the name or the address or the company. It's that you just chose.
They were already in default at the time I got that information. And we were not going to lose the tactical advantage for our client because our loyalty is to our client.
Got it. Thanks.
Are there any further questions?
Are there any further questions? Hearing none, we conclude our argument on 09 AP 2549 Robert Johnson versus Cintas Corporation. I want to thank you, Mr. O'Connor, and thank you, Mr. Johnson, for your arguments today on issues that have repeatedly come up in recent years about, quote, misnomers, quote, as to corporations and how they are doing business. So thank you for your briefs. Thank you for your arguments. And so concludes our hearing. The court will take a short recess to allow the students from Oconomowoc to leave if they wish and to allow Waupun High School students to enter. We are in recess.